Hey, Changemakers. In today's episode, we got Jay Papasan from The One Thing.
I think if you ask people what their one thing is, most people are surprisingly accurate, especially if you give them context. So, you know, Jay, what's the one thing that you think has really made your podcast successful? And you might have more than one thing, but it's usually not 50 things. And so the whole concept of the book is to get people thinking about that every day. So what would be my one thing for this month or this semester or for my job? And then to simplify their life to their number one priority. Yes, we have many priorities. You know, I'm a father, I'm a son. You know, I have all these roles in my life, an executive, author, right? And if I'm doing my executive role right now and I get a call that my son is sick at karate class, well, guess which role dominates? I'm going to say, hey, I got to go home. My kid's sick. I'm out of here.
This is the podcast for people that believe they do not need to change the world. We believe it's all about becoming the most effective version of yourself in the moments in life that matter the most. This is
the Inner Changemaker Podcast. Instead of changing the world, change their world. Hey, Changemakers, Jay here. Really excited to be hanging out with you guys in an interview format back in 2018. My goodness, it took us forever to get here, didn't it? I'm so sorry to keep you guys waiting. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you guys downloading this. I wanted to release this particular episode actually right before New Year's, and my computer was actually stuck in the Apple Store here in Italy, and so I couldn't get to the files, and we should have scheduled it ahead of time, but we didn't. And so when we got back the computer, it wasn't, you know, it was great because they actually fixed, you know, a lot of the exterior parts. I got like a new screen. I pretty much got a new computer without getting a new computer, which is always really, really great. And what happened was that I started looking at the files, at the video file with the audio file, and usually it's really easy for our editor to kind of mix it all together and to give you guys the video on our YouTube channel and to give you guys the audio on this podcast in this format. And for whatever reason, all the like next interviews were completely out of sync. So in the video, I can't even really release, I'm not going to release it. I can't release the video of this. Because every time that Jay and I talk, his name is Jay, by the way, so there's two Jays happening in this episode, we're completely like out of sync outside of like a few seconds. And so it became this really, really frustrating thing. We had this massive training that happened last week. And so I was really, really focused on that. And I apologize that we didn't get to this earlier, but I promise I'm going to make it up to you guys this week because the lineup is really, really exciting. It's really sick. And so I think I'm going to be posting at least two or three times. Definitely the next episode is going to be more of a solo episode, more of a personal episode where I'm going to show you guys and tell you how this community, how this podcast is evolving. And it's amazing. It's beautiful. And I have the level of clarity that I think I wish I had a couple years ago. But then again, maybe it was good that I didn't have that clarity. And I started this. And for those of you that have been listening, whether you started in 2015, whether you just started five episodes ago, wherever you are, okay, next episode, I'm going to walk you through what we're doing. I'm going to walk you through the movement. I'm going to walk you through what it really means to be a change maker and what we're looking to do in 2018. So I'm really excited by the idea of it. And I've been sharing with, you know, some of the entrepreneurs in my own network, and it's really great. So in this episode, I wanted to release it before the new year because I think it's super, super great. Kind of for like New Year's resolution. We talk a lot about that. We talk about goal setting. He's the co-author of The One Thing. If you haven't heard of The One Thing or you have read The One Thing, you're either way, you're going to get so much out of it because we talk about how we should approach goal setting, how we should approach productivity, how we should approach high performance, and what is the one thing, what's the priority in our lives, and how can we leverage the one thing to ultimately become more successful, whether it's in our lives, it's in our business, it's in our relationships, whatever it is. So I don't want to delay anymore because I do a kind of a proper intro for Jay literally in the next few seconds. But one last thing, I really appreciate all of you that joined me in our free Facebook community, www.theinnerchangemaker.com/tribe. If you haven't, go over there, hook it up, apply. It's 3 mini questions. And if you guys can do that, then you guys will make it into the Changemaker tribe. So more onto that into the next episode, but enjoy this episode with my man, Jay Papasan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another interview at The Inner Changemaker. Really, really pumped to be bringing you our guest today because he is not just a best-selling author, but he serves as the vice president and executive editor at Keller Williams Realty International, which obviously is known as one of the fastest growing real estate companies in North America. My guest shares my name, but he is definitely more wise, and he has co-authored a series of books, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, The Millionaire Real Estate Investor. I don't think we're going to be talking about real estate investing as much because he also co-authored a monster piece called The One Thing. And some of you might know of it. Some of you that don't know of it, you're definitely going to be introduced to it in this episode. But I want you guys to help me welcome Jay Papasan to The Inner Changemaker. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thanks for having me, Jay. Excited to be here.
Really excited to be here. And first off, let's start off this way. I mean, congratulations for selling. I think you guys are over 1.2 million copies of your book. And that is an amazing feat. I know we were riffing a little bit off record before we got started and talking about the average life of how much, or you know, average sales for books, and you've kind of walked me through a bit of the evolution. But really quick, I mean, how does it feel to have this book be so well received and for you guys to have sold over 1 million+ copies now?
You know, you want to say you're elated and all those things. It was actually like a giant relief that people liked it.
Mm.
I mean, we lived in a cave. We worked on this book for about almost 5 years, like call it 4.5 and change. And I remember we turned in this manuscript. It was over 400 pages long. Our publisher made us cut it back to the 240 it is today. And you're so myopic. We were so close to the work. There was a woman named Ellen Marks, who was our director of marketing. And she's a tough business person. And she just tells you like it is. And I remember she was the first person to give us formal feedback on the manuscript. And I just broke into tears because she goes, Jay, this is good. This is really good. So like every time like it keeps selling, it's like for me, it's like, yay, yay. And it's also a sense of relief because there's, I guess every writer's a little bit neurotic. You're convinced that you're eating, you know, your own medicine and you're just too close to your work and maybe it won't make sense to anybody else. So I love it. It's out there. It's spreading and it's helping people. And that's kind of what we always hope for.
Well, I'd love to hear a bit of the backstory of really how you guys got into it. But maybe before I even ask you that, like, why do you think that The One Thing kind of struck a chord with business owners and they don't even have to be business owners, really, like just anybody looking for more clarity and to, you know, kind of attack their goals and their life in a different way. I know every time I bring it up at dinners and events, people are always like, oh, that's, you know, great resource, great book. So you guys kind of hit that category. Why do you think it struck such a chord with your audience?
We set out to do two things. One, we were trying to reverse engineer something that we'd seen the pattern in Gary's life, mm-hmm. right? That yeah. when he, my co-author Gary, people don't know, he founded what's now the largest real estate firm in the world, right? Yeah. From scratch in less than 30 years and self-made billionaire, the whole nine yards. Like he's Mr. Success Story. Yeah. And what a great mentor and partner that I lucked into. So he had seen this pattern and we wanted to reverse engineer how he was doing it. It's one thing to kind of be entrepreneurial doing things. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to understand the model you're operating in and being purposeful. And then we looked at the reason we spent so long is we wanted to validate that other people did this the same way. It wasn't just Gary's idea.
Yeah.
So we had all of that going for us. And it's really about being a simple approach than anybody can do. And if people have something complex, I mean, it sounds really exciting, but most people can't live there for very long. Mm. So we put a lot of effort. That's like that I was sharing with you, you know, off the record, that we cut over 200 pages from this book before we released it.
Yeah.
You know, we really tried to simplify. So one, I think we did our job. I mean, I think the number one, we have 5-star reviews and 1-star reviews, and they both say it's simple, right? So I'll take that because we were going for simple and we weren't trying to say even necessarily anything new. We wanted to give people an approach that they could actually follow. So I think that the simplicity of the program, it's really easy to follow. It's something that showed up at a time when people are dealing with more and more complexity. So I think it was the right message at the right time. I know that sounds like a totally trite cliche, but it really is. It feels that way. I think we're dealing with, and I could quantify it on a lot of levels, with more opportunity and more obligations than any generation before us. You know, technology, we get assaulted every day with choices. Where to divide our attention, where to invest our time. I mean, just think about when I was growing up, I'll age myself. When I was growing up, you still had to walk to the TV to change the channel, right? And you had about 4 channels. And so you'd go to school on Monday morning and you would talk about Fantasy Island and The Love Boat because that's what everybody was watching. And today, you know, yes, there's shows like Stranger Things and Game of Thrones that everybody's watching. But on any given day, you don't know what people, because we have so many choices. So I just think a simple message that's actually effective that showed up at the right time. That's my theory. Hopefully, I don't know, well, maybe history will tell us, you know, what actually was the magic ingredient. But that's what I think has happened.
And it's truly incredible because it came out 2013, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're a little over 4 years into the journey.
I mean, that's incredible, right? And to hit that mark and have that much feedback, you know, the good and the bad. I mean, that's really cool. Tell us a little bit about your story, Jay. And this isn't honestly not a lot. This is not a question I asked a lot, but you know, it's funny. I was on an interview earlier today. And they were like, you know, you should, someone said, you should ask questions that sometimes you don't know the answer to so that it keeps you fascinated. It kind of piques your curiosity. But cool. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Gary being a great mentor. Like, mm-hmm. How did that transpire? Like, how did that whole thing take place? And then how did, you know, you end up co-authoring all these amazing books and getting your name and brand out there as well?
I don't know where the story starts, but it starts for me when I was about 12 years old and consumed with books and tried to write my first book. I borrowed a literal typewriter, an electric typewriter, and a card table, put them in my room, and proceeded to kind of rip off a combination of The Hobbit and Conan the Barbarian, right? That was my original first novel I was going to write. That's when I think back, that was my first time I tried to write. You can skip a lot of steps in between. A lot of writing, you know, English degrees. I ended up meeting my wife in New York. I was in publishing at HarperCollins at that time, and she was in marketing, and we got married and decided to relocate to Austin. After 5 months of backpacking and soul searching and all kinds of fun stuff. So we moved here without jobs. That's Austin, Texas behind me, if you're watching the video. And I needed to get a job. And so I applied for a newsletter writer at a little sleepy little company called Keller Williams because there was no publishing jobs here. So some of it feels random, right? We moved because we wanted to change a pace. We'd been in New York for a long time, moved to Austin, which was not the town it is today. This is in 2000. Back when I joined Keller Williams, there were only 6,700 agents in the company. Today, there's close to 160,000. So it was a tiny little company. There were 27 employees. And I stumbled onto the idea that Gary Keller was going to write a book. And I just approached him in the bathroom and said, I hear you writing a book. Do you remember I used to be in publishing? And it's a weird story, but that's kind of the genesis. I mean, my desire to be a writer goes back to my childhood. And I worked around books, but I didn't become a writer until I met Gary. And he's like, yeah, I'm writing this book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And we partnered, and about 90 days later, we produced our first work together. That book actually has gone on a much longer timeline to sell 1 million copies too. So it's a niche book for a very relatively small industry that has just shown it's gotten legs. And that was our first work. And the last work we did was The One Thing. So I don't know. Is that too much detail?
No. It's one I was going to say, like, lesson of the story here, everyone that's listening and watching, is find your mentors in the bathroom, you know, because that is when they're at their most vulnerable. Wow, that's such a crazy story.
You know what? I'll go beyond the humor.
Sure.
I'll just say this: when you find yourself, an opportunity shows up, don't be afraid to offer your services. Like, I think it's just kind of random. I literally saw a guy named Brad. He was a web designer. Yeah. I thought he was freelancing. I could tell he was working on a book cover because I'd worked in the industry too long. But there's no big publishing in Austin. And I just said, what are you freelancing? He's like, no, Gary and Dave are writing a book. And so the next time I saw them, I'm like, hey, I hear you're writing a book. I used to be in publishing. And that little conversation opened a door that has absolutely transformed my life. And I think it could have gone many ways. You know, I could have just quietly spread the word that I was in publishing. I could have never said anything. And I probably would have never gotten to work on that project. And who knows what would have happened. So I just think when opportunity shows up, you got to kind of knock on the door still, you know, to see if anybody's there. You can't just say, oh, that's the house.
No, and I think that's what's so awesome about your story. But it also shows, I mean, you know, even in creating the book and tapping into your own gifts for it and being able to kind of present that in a way. I mean, that's really awesome to position yourself there. And I can only imagine the impact it's had, right? Since you guys have moved to Austin and, you know, the impact that it's had on your life and the people that are listening and reading your books, right? And, you know, them getting clarity, whether it's in real estate or, you know, planning for their goals or in business. So, you know, that's really great. Let me ask you this, Jay, because I'm curious, you guys wrote The One Thing and you guys had a couple other books, you know, before that. Was there a time in your life that you can remember that you didn't kind of practice The One Thing? Like when you were unaware?
Oh God, yeah. Most of my life.
Right. Well, so what was life like? You know, maybe some people could resonate with, you know, with how life was like.
My hero, kind of in college, it was an intellectual hero. I kind of wanted to become Sherlock Holmes. So if you've read the novels or seen the movies, like here's a guy who kind of knows a lot about everything. And he can do like Kung Fu and he can solve a mystery. He's, you know, classic Renaissance man. And I grew up in the South and I thought I should someday be able to, you know, solve the world's problems, write a sonnet, an iambic pentameter, and skin a deer. Like I thought all of those skills were equally accessible, and I kind of spread myself out. So I was a very average student. I think I got two majors and two minors, and if I'd gone another semester, I could have had three majors. And I was probably a very forgettable B student in every one of my classes. So I was following that program. I mean, Sherlock Holmes is a fictional character. It's not like I worship Teddy Roosevelt or something, right? I picked someone who didn't even exist. So for me, a turning point was I was trying to quit smoking. It was in 1997. I was probably 28 at that time. I'm trying to get my math right in my head. And I had about 3 months to train for my first marathon. And I just remember I got this little index card out of Runner's World. And on day one, you run a mile. And on day two, you run 1.2 miles. And then you run a mile again. And then you run 1.2 miles. And then you skip a day. Then you run 3 miles. And then the next week, you repeat. And it's just this slight progression. And every Saturday was my long day. And I went from never having run more than 3 miles to running, 26.2. I did it in 3 hours and 42 minutes on 3 months of training. And the aha for me, you know, I always tell this because I connect it to my wife. I was dating my wife at that point. And I came home from my long training run. I was about 8 weeks into the program, 9 weeks. I can't remember exactly where it was. And I'd done my long run and I was rushing to get showered to go on a date with Wendy, my wife to be. So I was focused on her, not the run or anything else. And my roommate, hey, dude, how far did you run today? And I was like, 14 miles. And I went back to doing what I was doing. And he comes in and he's like, got two beers. He's like, we got to celebrate. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm going out on a date. He goes, you just ran a half marathon. And it didn't even hit me that I had already run what for a lot of people was a major milestone. But because I was focused on this really high target, I'd blown through this other one without even thinking about it. And I remember really reflecting on that for a long time, going, wow, this is the first time in my life that I'd really had to prepare for something over a long period of time to knock down, as we say in the book, a domino every day and little progress. And I was shocked at one, how fast it added up. It's like, wow, if you're just persistent, instead of kind of waiting to the last minute and studying for exam, if you actually study a little bit every day, it's infinitely larger than the sprint method, right? You know, it's the tortoise beats the hare all over again 1,000 times, but I'd never experienced it. And it changed what I thought was possible for me. It re-engineered how I looked. That was the first time I think I lived the book. And it was after that that I started being a little bit more methodical in my approach to things. And, you know, within 5 years, I was working for Gary, and he just operates like, right? Everyone, if you're going to be, he calls it his 3-foot circle, which is about how far apart your fingertips are if you stretch your arms. To be in that 3-foot circle, that's his sacred place for him. And you have to earn the right to get in there and stay there. And part of that is kind of living by these principles. So he kind of demands that everyone around him be focused and live by priority and, you know, some have a purpose and a mission. And I was all for that. I was like, great, this sounds like a lot of personal growth. I'm sign me up. And so meeting him took like what was a vague idea and turned it into a system that I could follow on a daily basis. And we wrote The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, I told you, in 90 days. That's a 400 and something page book. And it doesn't mean that we failed when we wrote the one thing in 5 years. It was a whole different kind of project that he didn't know as much about and we had to go explore farther. But I remember the 90-day interview I had to write the book was writing the book, and every day I had to turn around about 14 pages. It was like a term paper a day.
Yeah.
And I'd never worked harder, and every day it was a little bit of a stretch goal. But then you look up and you go, oh, wow, we just finished a manuscript. And it was a really crazy feeling. So that's been the journey with him.
So really quick, before we go any further, for people that are watching this, that are listening to this, if you don't have a copy of The One Thing, I mean, just go out, grab a copy, you know, if there's a way of downloading it, getting an e-copy, getting Kindle version, so you can kind of follow along, like in terms of this conversation and what we're talking about here. I know you've probably gotten asked this 1,000 times, but what's the simplest way for someone to, you know, I know the idea is simple, the book is simple, right? The 5-star versus the 1-star, everything is simplicity. But what's the easiest way for someone to kind of wrap their head around the one thing?
I think if you ask people what their one thing is, most people are surprisingly accurate, especially if you give them context. So, you know, Jay, what's the one thing that you think has really made your podcast successful? And you might have more than one thing, but it's usually not 50 things. And so the whole concept of the book is to get people thinking about that every day. So what would be my one thing for this month or this semester or for my job? And then to simplify their life to their number one priority. Yes, we have many priorities. You know, I'm a father, I'm a son. You know, I have all these roles in my life, an executive, author, right? And if I'm doing my executive role right now and I get a call that my son is sick at karate class, well, guess which role dominates? I'm going to say, hey, I got to go home. My kid's sick. I'm out of here. So we understand our priorities. We don't always live them. And the book is really about getting people to take a look at that on a more regular basis, narrow it down to just one thing. It doesn't mean that's all you're doing, but it becomes the first thing. And the process we use for getting that thing done is called time blocking, which is a fancy way of saying, just make an appointment with yourself. Preferably as early in the morning as you can to do that most important work. And when people do that simple act of, okay, let's just, it's a business book, right? So fundamentally, for my work, what's the fundamental activity that leads to my success? Well, I'm a writer, so I'm either reading stuff as research or I'm writing. And so I've got to have my one or two priority time block pretty much every day. And if I'm not doing those things, I didn't probably have a great day. So you figure out what that is for you, and then you add it to your calendar, and then you just follow your calendar. That's about as simple as I can explain it.
Right, right, right. I think everyone loves the simplicity of it, right? The one thing, it's all, some, you know, without explaining it, because it's some, it's like, oh, what is my one thing, right? What's that one thing that I want to go after that I'm going to make a priority? It reminds me a little of Steve Pressfield's work, the War of Art.
Love that book.
Where he asks,
1, 2, 3, 4 copies right there on my shelf that I have stacks of certain books that I like to give away, and that's one of them.
Yeah. No, and that's awesome. That book is so great, right? Because, like, it talks about the identity do you step into, but the pro, he or she shows up every day, right? He or she makes it a priority.
Yeah. You battle the resistance, right?
Yeah.
And you do your one thing.
I don't know. It just made me think about that. Cause I know you share this message around the world, you know, obviously, you know, the book sales kind of speak for themselves, and people have really, you know, implemented it. And a lot of people have had all these great results from it. Why do you think people feel the need, or they overcomplicate their goals and their lives and not make it as simple as it needs to be?
It's a way to avoid accountability. Would be the toughest, most honest answer I can give you. If I have a lot of things on my plate and I don't get one done, I say, well, look at all the stuff I did. But if you really are honest and you narrow it down to the one thing, you either did it or you didn't. And in our experience, you know, we work with people on my team every week. We meet, and my team has to identify their number one priority for the week. What do you think I ask them about the following Monday?
About the one thing from the previous week, right?
Right. How did your number one priority go last week? And hopefully the answer is awesome. Well, how do you feel about that? What would you do differently? It's not about management anymore. Now you just become a coach. Mm. And that's a great relationship to have. So I think one of the reasons we hide in complexity is it gives us a way out. It gives us an excuse for when we fail. And come on, we're all afraid of failure. Yeah. I don't care how, the most experienced, the most successful people, they call it the imposter syndrome, right? Because you have Elon Musk walking on stage, and in his head, he's going, gosh, they all think that I know the answers, and I know I don't, right? I mean, everybody's got that in them. I mean, hopefully they have some measure of human humility in them, right? But we all face that fear. But I think complexity gives us a place to hide. So there are a lot of reasons. I think that people who are selling you a system will promote how complex it is, and they think that complexity is synonymous with sophistication, right? Oh, look how, you couldn't build this bicycle, right? We built this with the best engineers in the world, right? It's got 3 pedals. And, you know, like, you can make it seem really sophisticated, but I've come to believe it's like they say about Hemingway's writing. It looks like it would be the easiest to imitate because of its simplicity, but it's the hardest because of the sophistication hidden in it. And I think that I admire simplicity and streamlined things far more than I do complex. But I do think it's a human thing. We see look at all the bells and whistles. It feels kind of attractive. So I think there's multiple reasons, but I think consciously or unconsciously, we know it gives us a place to hide. And there is some natural instinct that tells us that complex things are, for some reason, can be a little bit more attractive. They're less boring, maybe, than the simple things. The fundamentals, we get bored doing them, but they rarely go out of style.
Mm. Well, they become those timeless, you know, activities or those timeless practices, right? Like, I feel like they say in basketball or being an athlete, right? You hire a coach, and a lot of times you just go through the form and fundamentals of things.
Yeah.
And it, because of, you know, doing it over and over again, you build up, you know, that world-class-ness to the fundamentals. I also think it was Da Vinci that said, like, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication.
Oh, great. I'll have to borrow that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it just got me thinking.
He knew a few things, that Da Vinci guy.
Yeah, you know, he had some good things going on. So interesting. So, you know, from everything that you've seen, especially because you've probably seen so many case studies of people applying it, getting some great results. I'm kind of curious, has there ever been misconceptions about the one thing of like people maybe not misunderstanding it or maybe not being able to interpret it and apply it properly?
A lot. There's a section in the book. There's two areas where I see the two most common misconceptions.
Okay.
My favorite page in the book is page 114 in the American hardcover edition, where we go through the seven areas of your life that you would implement the question, the one thing question, right? What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything would be easier or necessary? And that's the fundamental tool we use to figure out what our one thing is. And, you know, I joke, like, it's not what's the one show I can stream on Netflix tonight such that by streaming it, right? It's not, that would be a trivial thing. And I'm capable of being that OCD about my hobbies and leisure time. I totally get that. But sure. For us, it was like your spiritual life. What's my one thing? My physical health, right? My personal life, my key relationships, my job, my business, my finances.
Mm.
And people see that and they go through the process of figuring out what their one thing is in each area. And then they right out the door and try to do seven things at once. I can't tell you how many people said, I did that exercise. It was so enlightening. Like I knew the answers in some and had to go find them in others. And I feel so much better now that I know what my one thing is in these important areas. And I'm like, great, where did you start? He goes, well, I did all of them. I'm like, no. that's not one
thing. I'm totally guilty of that, by the way.
Okay.
I'm totally guilty of that.
I told you. So we maybe have an opportunity for the revised edition to make this even more clear. Our goal would be that people would pick the one. And I've done an exercise where I get people to rate themselves from 1 to 10 in each area. You know, with one is I'm incredibly embarrassed by my performance in this area, and 10, you know, I should get the Nobel Prize, right? Most people will go to their 2s and 3s, not their 7s, 8s, and 9s, and say, this is where I want to start. Because it's pretty much human nature. We're more motivated to remove pain than to seek pleasure. So it's the old aspirin versus vitamins. They want aspirin. And they'll go to the area that they're stumbling in the most and figure out their one thing. Start there and then make that activity a habit. In our research, it takes about 66 days on average. And so if you're trying to improve your physical health, let's just say, and you wanted to go on the keto diet, I'd say, great, go keto. Awesome choice. How long do you think it'll take for that to be a habit? 66 days is average. That's kind of meaningless in context of you and your diet. And so you get people to allocate more than just 20 days or something, monitor their progress. And when it feels automatic, when they're going into a restaurant and they just know what to order, awesome. Now, what was the next priority that you wanted to focus on? But if you're still having to think about and work on it and you start doing the second thing, guess what happens to your first thing?
Well, it's not as good. And because it gets half your energy, half your attention at the very
exactly.
best.
And and at times it will absolutely unravel.
And you default back.
All the hard work and progress that you've made will fall apart. So first thing is remember to look at the title again. It's the one thing. And doesn't mean you only have one thing. It's one thing at a time. So you're giving one habit formation, right, the supreme position in your life. When I was training for that marathon, Jay, my week revolved around those runs, right? You know, we've all had a time. Maybe we were getting married. Maybe, you know, someone we loved was getting married. You're graduating. You have to write your thesis, whatever that is, you know, term papers, whatever. And it felt like our whole life suddenly had to revolve around this thing if we really were going to get it done. And that's the whole goal of one thing is you make this number one priority. Everything else revolves around it until that thing is set. And then you move on to the next one. So that's probably the biggest misconception. And someone has to read halfway through the book to even get to that. So kudos to them, right? Most people don't finish books. The other one is around time blocking. They understand that these are the core most important activities. And in our research, pretty well backed up, if you just time block it, you make an appointment with yourself. So you're navigating all the crap you have to do and figure out, well, I can probably do it at this time. You're about 3 times more likely to do it than just saying, I'll work out in the morning. Well, when and where? Well, I will work out at 5:30 a.m. in my driveway with my wife tomorrow Wednesday and Friday. Great. It's on the calendar. Great. You'll be reminded. Great. You're really likely to do it now. So I've literally had people send me their calendars and they're time blocking in 30-minute increments their entire day. So that can happen. I know people, I've been there where I had so many meetings, I didn't know when I was going to go to the bathroom, much less eat lunch, right? I'm just like crazy. That's to be avoided in general. So for us, it was about, there's just three big things we want you to make sure that go on your calendar first. First is your vacation time, because if you're going to be extraordinarily successful, you need to break. And I see burnout, all these preachers out there, and I won't name the gurus that say you have to work 90 hours a week. I think that's total BS. If you're doing the right things, you can get it accomplished in a far less time and still have time for yourself and your family and your health and all those other things. So vacation time, planning time, and your one thing time are the first three things. And my first 2 hours of the day are usually around writing, so I can launch my day with my number one activity. Most of the world kind of knows when I'm doing it. So over time, I've trained the world. And then the rest of the day takes care of itself. Now, Mondays, like today, I tend to be more booked than other days. But if you don't have any flex time, it's just a recipe for failure. So I usually tell people, if you know what your real priorities are, try to get them all done before noon. And then cut yourself some slack. You'll usually create enough new things in your morning that you'll need all afternoon to handle them anyway. And if you didn't, then you've done your most important work. Take the rest of the day off. Go to a park. Go see an afternoon movie. I don't care. So I think that people go crazy on the time blocking and they try too many things at once. They follow everything else in the book right. So maybe there's an opportunity that we could have explained those things better.
Yeah.
Hey, Changemakers, are you enjoying the episode so far? Now, before we go a bit deeper, I gotta ask, have you been thinking of leveraging podcasts to grow your business? Not sure maybe where to start or scared of wasting time on the wrong things? Well, let me be your guide as I show you the right sequences and steps to be able to launch your very own top-rated show on iTunes, as well as leverage the podcast and your show to build your business. Don't you think it's time that you put a voice behind your products and services? If you were drawn to this show, then I know that it's time that you got working to share your message with the world. Get my podcast creation roadmap for free at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap. Once again, it's www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap. Now back to the episode.
Well, I know I definitely, you know, I definitely fall into that category. So isn't it crazy? Like you can understand content and you've done it even right before. And yet sometimes you still go back to maybe some of the old, you know, overachieving type of habits.
I do it all the time, man. I mean, yeah. It happens. You just get out of rhythm. You get a little unfocused and you look up and wow, this happened to me earlier this year. I'm fortunate I have a virtual EA. Crystal, if you're listening, Crystal, you rock. And I remember she kept saying, when do you want to do this? I said, oh, that's a great opportunity. Let's just find some time in the afternoon. And I kept saying yes. This book is about knowing what you've really said yes to so you can say no to the other stuff, right? And I looked at my calendar and I looked at how crazy it was. And I just told her, I need about 30% of my time back. And I remember the look on her face because we were meeting in person. I was like, I need you to go through my calendar and just call and apologize and say, can we postpone this meeting? And I want you to start pushing things out in the future. Just push them out. I need more of my time back or I'm not going to hit my goals. Because I had just fallen into this bad rhythm of saying, yes, I want to help people. I enjoy like conversations like this. And I went back to it. Normally I'd say yes to one video a week and one kind of one-on-one consult with a reader. And that's an hour and a half of my week. But if I say yes to three of them, now I'm looking up and now there's a significant portion of my week where I'm focused on other people's objectives. And where's the balance? You know, I drew the line at, you know, about an hour and a half to 2 hours a week. And what happens is when I get relaxed, I'll look up and I'll have 10 hours. And can you say that promoting the book is a great activity for an author? Yes. But I got to be writing the next one too. So anyway, that's I don't even know where you started. That's clear. Like, but I just remember that earlier this year, it happened to me, man. I was there falling into a pattern of activity that I helped write a book that's completely against that activity.
From the author himself.
Yeah. Everybody's human. Well, nobody walks on water. I don't care what they say.
Yeah. No, and we totally hear you. And for people that are listening and watching this, I mean, you guys should definitely go pick up The One Thing and at least be implementing and integrating this type of exercise. I want to ask you a couple last questions,
sure.
You know, but before we wrap up, especially this time of the year, right around holiday season, New Year's, you know, everyone has been there where they've made a New Year's resolution where they declare this next year to be the best year, you know, that they've ever experienced, right? Their relationships are going to, you know, be 10 out of 10. Their business is going to 10X, right?
Yeah.
They're, you know, and people want that, right? And when they set goals, they have that level of energy, right? No one ever sets, no one ever goes on New Year's resolutions like, well, I just want to get a 5% improvement. Everybody kind of goes all out.
I want to have a really average year, right? It's going to be an average year. It's going to be the best average year I've ever had. Yeah, not going to happen.
So, and I think you talked about it already, because even in those misconceptions, those are amazing principles from time blocking to really just picking that one thing. Would you say those are some great principles for people to rely on so that they can plan to have, and you know, not just design the plan, but obviously a part of execution and, you know, a little bit of luck as well, they can actually have what they actually wrote down at the beginning of the year.
That's, I think... The one thing is the approach you take to getting what you want, right? We had to, you know, the book is about extraordinary success. And then we were like, well, what does success mean? And fundamentally, it means getting what you want. Because if I ask 1,000 people, I'll get 1,000 different definitions of success. For some people, it's a lot of money. For some people, it's fame. You get what I mean? So I think it's a great approach for getting what you want for success. In terms of goal setting, we have a process in the book called Goal Setting to the Now. And I think a lot of us look up and we say, oh, I want to have a top 10 blog. I want to have a cash flow business. I want to have a portfolio of real estate investments, right? And those are goals that don't happen in 3 months, right? They're not normally going to be a short-term activity that gets this massive result. And so you have to think in terms in bigger chunks. And so what I love about Goal Setting to the Now, it understands the fact that the farther in the future a reward is, the less pull over it has for you today. So if I'm dreaming, pick one of those three things, like a real estate empire. We'll go, I want to have 100 investment properties, right? Awesome. That's if there's no progression back to 5 years and back to today, it won't change how we spend our money this week. Right. And so the goal setting that now says, well, based on my someday goal, what would I have to achieve in 5 years? We say the one thing. If you achieve this one thing, you would really feel like you were on track for that someday goal. So maybe it's like, I've got a portfolio of 25. I don't know, whatever that is. And you say, great. Well, based on that, what would you have to accomplish this year to feel like you were on track for your 5-year goal? Not for your someday goal, but for your 5-day. You're walking it back. And well, if I have 5 years and I'm going to get 25 properties, so maybe what if I could acquire my first 5 this year? Which now that I'm saying the example is still kind of outrageous because you know real estate investing.
It's still.
Yeah.
Right. It's a little.
It's a bit.
Maybe your first couple ones.
Yeah.
Depends on how much liquidity you have.
Without going into that detail, right? To say, well, then based on your 1-year goal, what would I have to do this month? And then based on your 1-month goal, what would you have to do this week? And based on my weekly goal, what do I have to do today? And what you've done is all of those gaps are a little bit of a leap of faith, especially between the 5-year and the someday. But most people can look out about 5 years and have a reasonable sense of what might happen. And then what they can do is we're pretty good at setting 1-year goals. So what I love about the process is you take a very distant target and you work your way backwards. When they say begin with the end in mind, I think that's what they really meant. If you look in your past and say, how did you become a podcaster, Jay? There's probably a series of milestones, a book you read or a person you met, and it's a straight line in your memory. But if someone's looking forward, all they see are all the options. So it's kind of a mental trick of jumping ahead and working backwards. So you have more or less a more direct route. In my experience, that's great. So I usually tell people, don't just be setting a New Year's resolution. for 2018. Take a little extra time. My wife and I have been doing it for 10 years. We get on Priceline. We'll find a cheap hotel, right? Go spend a night out of our environment so we're not dealing with our kids or our dog. And we'll start talking about, where do we want to go? Who do we want to be when we grow up? Well, based on that, what do you think we need to do in 5 years? Based on that, what do you think we have to do in 2018? Great. Well, which goals are you taking? And it's just a little bit more methodical process. So I think that would be the one piece of advice I would give people, that and also don't do like 20 New Year's resolutions, right? Let's start with one.
Yeah. You know, for my birthday was a few months ago, and it's right at the end of the summer. And my girlfriend asked me, hey, what do you want to do on your birthday? Do you want to have a big dinner party? Do you want to go out to dinner? Do you want to do this? Do you want, you know, there's like these obvious options, right? And I've never done this before, but I really thought about it. And I said, what did I really, really want to do? Like outside of any, like no obligation whatsoever. Like, what does Jay really want to do? And what came to mind was I would love to sit down with her and to kind of do a very similar exercise where we said, hey, where are we going to be in 3 years, not just from a relationship standpoint, but and from our business. We kind of work together on the business front. And it was so cool to, like, you know, in the morning we would just allow ourselves to dream, right? To allow ourselves, like, someday we'd love to have a home base here. Someday, you know, to have these opportunities, right?
Right.
And then in the afternoon, we got super tactical, or it seemed that way, because you broke it down to, okay, where do we need to be 12 months from now? Where do we need to be in this next 30, you know, 90 quarter, you know, what do we need to get done? Where do we need help? You know, where do we need to lower pressure and noise and all this kind of stuff? So it was like the best birthday activity for me personally. And I was super excited because I was like, wow, like I'm entering this new, you know, age feeling super hyper focused on what's going to happen in the next 3 years. You know, so right. It was kind of cool.
One, I love that story.
Yeah.
Two, you've got to be the biggest productivity nerd I've ever met. I love that about you. You would give up your birthday to do long range planning. And I think you hit on it. I mean, especially if this is a person, this is your girlfriend, I'm doing it with my wife. It's so important to involve the people that matter most in your long range vision. And that can be kind of a vulnerable activity. Right? Oh, where do you want to be in 5 years? Well, I'd love to lose 20 pounds, right? I mean, whatever that is. But now you've also got a partner on the journey. And that's just so incredible. So one, I mean, my hat is off to you for doing the activity, and I love that you discovered that it was really fun. It is energizing. And the progression of dreaming to planning to tactical is exactly kind of how it's evolved over 10 years of doing this with my wife. We usually will go to dinner, and we won't even take a paper, right? We might have our phone out so we can take notes if we have a really great idea, but it's kind of like, let's just go really broad, you know? Like, what's some crazy goals? Like, oh, I'd love it if we could live and work from France for 6 months or something. It's like, oh, that's cool. I would love to do that too. And you just go really wide. And then the next day we get up and we start formalizing it. We get our laptops. And by the end of the day, we've got spreadsheets, right? We are like, now, tactical. How much money do we have to save to get that next rental property? Awesome. We can do that by this, this, and this. And it doesn't always finish in one day, but it's what a great thing. I mean, you stumbled on, I would just say, keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, I do have a follow-up question, which is a bit selfish, but I think it'll help people that are going through this process. Hopefully they're geeking out. Hopefully you guys are geeking out as much as I am, and to get a resource like The One Thing, and even to get Jay on here to share a bit of his time. We know it's limited. He even told us. So, what do you do to keep yourself in check? Because, you know, we talked about, you know, sometimes, you know, it's overwhelming. So there's so many opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And there's all these great things that we want to say yes to. We did the planning. We were excited about it in January, but now it's April. We've said yes to a few things, right? But we're kind of still on track. Like, mostly it's good. But how do you ever is there a way that you kind of keep yourself in check to kind of say, hey, we're making sure we're moving. We're going to finish November, December strong. That type of thing. Whatever the 12-month period is.
Two things. I'm gonna go off camera for 2 seconds.
Okay.
I carry a journal with me every day, and in it I've got my 411.
Nice.
And,
okay.
I've got my annual goals, business and personal, based on those, what I'm going to do this month, and based on that, what I'm going to do this week. And it's the form we talk about in the book. And it just gives me, it's very analog. I mean, it's an Excel spreadsheet is what I built it in. Yeah, but it's every week I have to confront this. And so I look at what our long-range plans were, translate to this document at the beginning of the year. I'm like, well, based on what I have to accomplish this year, what are the handful of things that are really important? I prioritize them. And then every month and every week, I look at my calendar and say, do I have enough time block to do these things? So first, have a system. If you're not systematic, most people are great at setting goals. They're really bad at engaging with them. And you need a system to remind yourself what was important to you and why. And I'll tell you that you can't read it, but like I'd say about a third of these are crossed off and we're in November. Some of them won't get crossed off because I thought it was a great idea and it just didn't turn out to be. And I keep them there as a reminder to myself that, sure. Yeah, nobody's got a crystal ball.
Yeah.
I thought I knew what was going to happen this year and it just didn't turn out. Mm-hmm. And some of them are failures. I just overestimated what I can achieve. You know, the classic planning fallacy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We all think we can get more done in the time we have. Yeah. And as efficient, I mean, I have a lot of scrutiny. I have people saying, well, you wrote the book. Why are you multitasking? I'm like, okay, I'm human. That's why.
Right.
So like I said, nobody's perfect. But so one, have a system. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a whole community called Living Your One Thing. And yeah. all we do is help people through the rhythm of engaging with their goals every week.
Yeah.
It's so simple, but it's effective.
Yep.
And it works. And the other one is I have a coach. My wife has two coaches right now. And for me, the rhythm is I have an hour every other week and I send this document. I've had to explain it to him at the beginning of the year. And he knows the three areas on here that if I'm not achieving what I'm supposed to achieve in terms of my writing days, my reading list, right? And my networking, which is for an introvert writer, right? I still own businesses. I have to do a certain amount. So he knows my big priorities, and if I'm not making progress in those, we don't get to talk about anything else. And so guess what? Knowing that that's all he's going to ask me about, what do you think I focus on?
Those things, those priorities.
Right. I don't want to have that conversation for the 25th time this year.
Mm.
It's not that productive. It's just me saying excuses about why I didn't do what I knew I needed to do.
Yeah.
But if I get my stuff done and I'm on track, then I can ask him and work with his, or in my wife's case, her wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. Whoever your coach happens to be, and get their real coaching around other things versus just choosing to be accountable to that process. That makes sense?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And it's an awesome reminder from coaching and mentorship standpoint. But that accountability is massive. So for people that, two questions, for people that want to dive deeper, you know, they got the book, maybe they geeked out on it as much as I did, or, you know, they're in the process of integrating it into their lives. Is there a way for them to dive deeper with you guys? I know you said you're constantly writing, so maybe is there something coming up that, you know, we could be aware of? Like, where can people socially stalk you, Jay?
Luckily, my last name, Papazan, is super uncommon. So if they just Google me, they're going to find me on all the social networks. And I allocate not a lot of time, but a little time every day to engage. And I get questions from my readers. And I can't remember to tell you how many times I've reached out to authors and how wonderful it feels when they actually respond. Because I'm writing about them. I want their answers. It takes time. So I try to be accessible. But I would tell people to go to theonething.com with the number one, theonething.com. And we've got a podcast. We've got our community, you know, which is the 411 community, Living Your One Thing. We've got some courses. So depending on what they need, we have tons of free resources. They can just dive in and take the next step. But, you know, these documents like the 411 forms, they're all there as free downloads. I've taught employees over the years that are using these, and I know one employee took it to like Fossil, and like their whole writing group was using it there. And I was like, really? She goes, yeah, I just kind of got used to it. So I just picked it up when I became a manager over there. I was like, that's cool. So it's simple, it's effective. And I think I like the idea of communicating with my people, or if I'm my people, communicating with my boss every week. That way I know I'm on track. It's not like somebody, you're loading up on someone for their annual review, good or bad. It gives you a more of a coaching rhythm, honestly. Most coaching, either monthly, weekly, or biweekly. So this is kind of a weekly gram. So I'd say go to the website, theonething.com, and pick your poison. There's a lot to choose from now. We've been out for 4 years, so we've tried to develop the systems so that people can live the book a little easier.
And I'm going to link to everything in the show notes, if you're watching this on YouTube, awesome. in the comment section. So I think it's, you guys provide definitely a lot of resources there, and hopefully people found, you know, some great value out of this interaction, this interview. Last question for you, Mr. J.
Sure.
When you think of the word change maker, since the show Inner Change Maker, what comes to mind for you? Any pictures, any words, anything that comes to mind?
I can't remember if it made it into the book or not, Jay. There's like a poem that Gary used to read, and it's an old cliche poem, right? That a guy went out to change the world and found out it was too big. And so he set out to change his country, but he didn't have enough influence. He tried to change his city and he couldn't reach everyone. He tried to change his family, but he wasn't enough. So he settled for just changing himself, right? And then, you know, the cliche goes, in changing himself, he suddenly was able to impact his family, and impacting his family, he was able to impact his town, right? Boom, boom, boom. We chatted about this before. The word inner is really important for me in the change maker. I think it's left out. I'm so glad you chose to put it there. All leadership begins with self-leadership. I think you look up, and I've followed people for a good while who were smart, amazing people. But the moment I kind of figured out that they weren't living what they were preaching, it's hard to follow them for me. So even if they're failing at it, right? I'm cool if they're failing at it, because most of us are too. But it's important for me. Maybe that's my personal bias, that I feel like if you're going to tell people to live a certain way, you should live that way as best you can too. And like I said, they can fail at it. They just got to be trying. And that's inspiring to me. And I think focus on yourself and see where that can have the biggest influence in the world. You were nodding your head and laughing. Was that in the book, or is that just a cliched old poem that we all had like on our grandmother's wall?
No, but I love it. I do. I do think it resonates a lot. I know for me, but I know for our listeners and people that are into the show, you know, that's what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to, you know, yeah, you know, talking about making money on the internet, that sounds amazing. Talking about, you know, passive investing with real estate, maybe it's a different conversation. You know, that sounds so interesting. You know, traveling the world and working for friends. It's like people want to do all these things, right? But a lot of times, it's just like, how do I become the best version of myself, you know, so yeah. that I can impact my team, I can impact those closest to me. And sometimes maybe it's just impacting you, right? Just getting some of these processes in place. So
well, what's more important, to get the things that we want or get the things we need?
The things that we need.
I think so too. And I think all those shiny objects, passive income and online courses or whatever the hot thing is, are things that we want. Yeah. If we focus on the person we want to become, not the things that we'd like to do, it definitely narrows the things that we'll choose to do based on who we want to become. I think a lot of people, and you know, Pat Flynn, Smart Passive Income, he wrote that book, Will It Fly? And what I loved about that is he had helped so many people start businesses, right? He got really good at helping people. Like the number one problem was people would look up and they had a cash flow business that they hated going to work every day. The idea seemed so attractive, but they'd spent no time figuring out who they were and why they wanted it. And so they were picking horrible companion businesses for their own lives. Right, so it's a really simple book that had a really important message, like kind of figure out why you're pursuing this. You know, are you really want to open yet another taco stand? Is it that you love cooking? Is it you love food? Like, try to figure out what's at the root of that instinct and make sure that you're making the best choice, not just a choice. So I'm sorry. We just started a whole other conversation after we said
I know. I was going to say, we're going to have to get Pat Flynn in here, and we'll have to have like part two of this in a three-way interview somehow.
Oh, you'd love to have him. He's great.
Jay, I wanted to just commend you super quick on being a great example of a change maker, you know, omitting some of the, you know, being human and, you know, being the author of The One Thing, but also omitting, you know, you yourself go through the motions as well, right? And I think everybody really resonates with that. And I applaud you for the things that you've shared here today. So thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for the wisdom. And I know there's definitely a few moments that there's a lot of moments of wisdom in here, that I think if we implement it, we're going to be so much better in actually getting a lot closer to what we actually need and the things that we want in our lives.
Love it. Thank you so much for having me and sharing me with your audience. I appreciate it.
Want to discover how you can begin to tap into your inner changemaker and become the leader for the important people around you? You can now grab a copy of my new audio training, How to Be the Leader You Truly Are, for free at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/leadership. Inside the training, you will find my top three proven strategies from millionaires and billionaires that have been featured on the show. And by simply applying them, I was able to go from sleeping in my parents' living room to leading and running multiple successful businesses and began an endless journey of impacting those closest to me. You can do it too. Go to www.theinnerchangemaker.com/leadership to get your free copy now.